This week on Family Anatomy, Anatomy of Encouragement, Part 1, with Courage, My Love.
The hosts of Family Anatomy are psychologists, but they're not your psychologists. So if you want to talk to someone about family or mental health issues, you can get a referral from your family doctor. This show is for information only.
Welcome to Family Anatomy, your source for parenting and relationship information, with your host, Dr. Brian McDonald. You can find us at familyanatomy.com or look us up on iTunes, and let's get right into it today. We're talking about encouragement. Now, unfortunately, Dr. Spisano couldn't be with us to talk about this subject today, but we both do get a lot of parents who talk to us about how do we get our kids interested in something? And once they are interested, how do we maintain that interest? How do we support them? What if a child has a particular talent? Maybe you've got a gifted child or a child who is interested in becoming a musician or an athlete. How do we push them to practice? How do we encourage them to develop whatever their skill is that they're interested in? Last week on the website, I wrote about a study that was done a few years ago where the researchers interviewed some elite athletes about what helped them get to that level. How did they reach that pinnacle of achievement, I guess you could say, in terms of their athletics? And many of them, most of them, a majority, I would say, said that it was the support, the emotional support, well, and financial and support with transportation and things like that, of their families and especially their parents. So I thought that this was really interesting. And at the same time, it was like kismet. It was like the stars aligned. And around the same time as I was writing that article, I saw a video on YouTube of this band called Courage My Love. And Courage My Love is a three-person band. The lead singer and drummer are twin sisters. They're 17 years old, and their bass player is an 18-year-old guy who is a friend of theirs. And they're just starting to break through and take their careers to a professional level. So they've got a music video on Much Music, which is the Canadian equivalent, I guess, of MTV, although they do still play music videos here. And they're about to release their first CD. And so I saw this video, and then they were coming to Ottawa to do they're doing a tour around the province now, and they were coming to Ottawa, so they were going to be in the neighborhood. So everything came together, and I was able to meet not just with the band members, but all of their parents came to this interview to talk about how they supported their kids in their dream, really, of becoming professional musicians. And now that they're just starting to become successful, I was able to speak with everybody involved about what were the factors that contributed to that. So I thought this is a fascinating group of people, and their story, I think, is really amazing. So I sat down with them for an hour. So we're going to listen to the first half today, where we talk about their early development, their interest in music, how their parents encouraged them to practice, all of those kinds of things. And then in a couple of weeks, we'll put up the second part of that interview. But like I said, these people are really interesting people with a great story to tell. Now, what I will tell you is that this was recorded in a room. There was eight of us sitting around a table talking. So there's a little bit of talking over one another, and it certainly was. You'll hear probably the large room effect. So it doesn't sound like it's recorded in our studio, and that's because it's not. We met in a room that was a bit closer to the club, and we used the equipment that was there. But bear with it. Stick with that audio, because I think the story is great, and it's especially great for parents whose kids have some talent or interest that the parents would like them to develop. So without further ado, let's get right into it, and we're going to talk with the band members of Courage My Love and their parents.
Hi, a huge group of people here, so let's start with everybody's names. We'll start right over here on this side of the room and we'll go around.
Okay, I'm Phoenix, and I play drums in Courage My Love.
I'm Mercedes, and I'm the lead vocalist and guitarist of Courage My Love.
I'm David, and I'm the father of Mercedes and Phoenix.
And I'm Judy, I'm the mother of Mercedes and Phoenix.
And I'm Lynn, I'm the mother of David, the bassist.
I'm David, the bass player for Courage My Love.
And I'm Kirk, the father of the bassist, David.
Wow, so it's like a whole family reunion in here. So one of the first things that I wanted to ask everybody about was two people in the band are twin sisters, so obviously we know how you connected with one another, but how did you hook up with David?
Well, we were all friends before we started playing together in the band, and David, we met through some drama stuff that we were doing, and we've been looking for another bass player for a while, and he'd been looking for a band for a while, so it just kind of worked. It just kind of worked out.
Everybody was available at the same time.
Yeah. It was good timing.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Now, you've got some videos up on YouTube. You've been playing together for a while now, and now you're on tour, I think, around Ontario at least.
Yeah, we're playing a lot of shows around Ontario and, you know, parts of Ontario around Canada.
Now, getting to the point where you can travel and do shows doesn't just come out of nowhere, right? You don't just all of a sudden pick, unless you're Jack White, maybe, you don't just pick up a guitar and go out on stage. How did you get involved in music?
Well, Phoenix and I have been taking music classes from a very young age, and we just started listening to music from a very young age, and we really got into rock music when we were around, you know, 11 or 12 or something like that. And we always kind of wanted to be in a band together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, we started writing together. You know, it's been a long time that we've been writing and jamming and stuff together. So it's almost been, I can't even remember when we started because we've just always been doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. And were there musical influences in your family? Like, are the two of you, your parents, are they musicians too?
No.
But we always thought that music and languages would get you through life more easily.
Yeah.
You know, let you travel and just meet lots of people and always let you find a place to hang your hat.
Okay.
So they started in a program. It was
a Suzuki
bass program. And the idea was that they had to learn four instruments plus piano. And then at age 7 or 9, they were supposed to choose piano plus one other instrument. Well, they didn't want to give them up.
So yeah.
They learned many instruments.
Oh, okay.
All the way through. And they could do that because they were homeschooled. They didn't have to.
So they were homeschooled. They had lots of time to pick up on these different instruments. So what about you, David?
Well, I did like kinder music, which is like very young age, like I think 5 or 6. I learned how to play glockenspiel in that.
Mm-hmm.
It was like just basic rhythms and stuff. And then I started playing piano. I can't remember what age I was. I played that for a bit, but I never really practiced what I was supposed to. I just did my own thing. So I ended up quitting piano because I wasn't really learning anything because I wasn't practicing. And then I started playing bass, and that was about grade 9. And music had been around my house. Like my dad plays guitar and stuff, and he used to play when I was younger. And so yeah.
Your dad nodded his head when you said you do your own thing.
Well, not to embarrass David, but you know, when he said he played piano and he didn't practice, well, he did practice, but not necessarily what the teacher wanted him to practice. He would sit at the piano and make up tunes that I'd be in the family room, another room. And I'd be sitting there and going, wow, what is that? And I'd say, what is that, David? And he said, oh, I just made that up. And just, to me, phenomenal music for
a prodigy, yeah.
Yeah, what
happened? And you did music in school.
Yeah, like I did music through school.
And school and bands and...
Yeah, I never really stuck to one instrument for very long. I played flute for 2 years. I played piano. I guess piano is my second longest instrument I ever played. That was 5 years. I've been playing bass for about 3.5-4 years now.
So why did bass stick for you?
I wanted to be different. That sounds so cheesy, but like, I wanted to play guitar at first, but I played it for a bit and it didn't really gel with me. So I started playing bass and I took lessons and everything, and then I got really bored of it because I didn't have a band. I didn't have anything to really drive me to do fun things with it. It was just like practicing other cover songs and all that, and scales and blues riffs and all that. So then I went back to guitar and kind of messed around with guitar for a bit, but it still didn't really fit right, so I'm glad I came back to bass.
And it's so hard to find bassists.
Yeah.
It's true. There are not as many bassists as there are guitar players, or even drummers.
Yeah.
So
you lucked out.
We did.
So I get a lot of questions in the work that I do, both on the website and in my practice, from parents saying, okay, we've got our kids in music lessons, we think music is important, how much should we push them to practice? Because they don't feel like practicing between lessons. So how did that work out at your house?
We our parents like wanted us to practice, obviously.
At first it was kind of like we didn't want to practice and they had to push us to.
Yeah.
But then after a while we got into it and we didn't need them to tell us to do it anymore. You know, because I think for every instrument, when you start out, that's the hardest part. But when you get good enough that you can kind of make your own way and figure stuff out for yourself, then you don't need to be pushed anymore.
Want to practice more when you're actually good at it, but when you feel like you're struggling and you don't really want to practice,
which it's frustrating when you're first learning it.
Yeah.
Then after you know how to play it already, it gets easier and you feel like practicing.
But I don't think they were ever like, you must practice, you can't play outside. You know, like, they weren't like that. They were kind of more easy, but they were like, yeah, they made us practice.
Yeah.
How did that work?
I think when they started, actually, the wife Judy actually practiced with them. So that makes a difference when the parent is actually involved rather than telling somebody to go and practice because of the kind of program that they were in.
Yeah, and it's nice at a young age for kids, I think, to have an audience. So if a parent is there to be an audience, no matter how good or bad the music is, you know, you're still performing. And I think, it was fun, actually.
So being there with them and going through the same kinds of frustration with learning a new instrument was helpful. There was less of the pushing and more of the support and encouragement. Come on, let's do this.
Yeah.
Sure, it's fun to learn.
Yeah, they obviously took it farther than I did.
That's great. How about at your house, David?
I don't really know. It was kind of like, okay, have you practiced yet today? And it would always be, no, not yet. It was never like, you have to practice, like, go practice. It was supportive encouragement, but it wasn't if you don't practice, you're grounded, or if you don't practice, you can't go and play with your neighbor or whatever. Like, it was just kind of like, well, you should be practicing. A little bit of guilt tripping. I found when I started to enjoy an instrument more, it wouldn't be, have you practiced yet? It was like, well, I would still be asked that, but the answer would be different. I'd say, yeah, I have. And but if you're not enjoying the instrument, it's a lot harder to push yourself to practice and sit down and run through the scales that are killing you or the song that's killing you.
So. It took you a while to find the instrument that you wanted to play. Where you were playing, the girls were learning to play everything.
Yeah, we had motivation because after, you know, one instrument kind of, if you learn how to play piano, for example, that can translate onto guitar.
Or cello, or guitar,
or bass. Because you learn sheet music and it's all kind of the same. You know, treble clef, bass clef, in different instruments, you can just learn it and like apply it to any instrument that you want.
Okay.
So yeah.
So the hard part was that initial learning stage and finding the instrument that you wanted, and that required more reminders and maybe a little bit of gentle encouragement from your parents. Was it always gentle encouragement?
As David said, there was no threats of you can't have a dessert or you can't go outside and play if you don't practice. There was certain, I'm sure, frustration between Lynn and I of, you know, has he practiced today? Well, I didn't hear him earlier. Have you heard him when I wasn't home? Or, you know, I think I have to, you know, agree with David and what Mercedes said. When you find an instrument that you like, then it's not as, you don't have to be pushed as hard to practice it. And once you master some of the fundamentals, then, oh, I can do this and do that. And then and then you start to experiment and do more things.
I think the other thing, at least for the girls, is that it always seemed like real, like even the practice seemed like they were performing. And we would do music nights in the neighborhood, like a bunch of families would get together, other musicians. And you guys would always prepare something for the music nights.
Yeah.
That you, we love adults, people all ages playing. And, cool. And so you guys would just be part of that and say, yeah, they wanted to do something for music night.
There's a whole community of people that
yeah.
are involved
yeah.
in encouraging you.
Like if you have a deadline or a goal, then practicing becomes more...
like you're more self-motivated.
Yeah, because you don't want to,
yeah.
you know... look like an idiot. You know, you don't want to go on stage and be like, oh yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, if there's a goal or, you know, something to motivate you towards practicing, that's always good.
Mm-hmm. But you have to like it at the same time.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
I think that's with David and our daughter Sarah, it was always the making sure that their music was being enjoyed. So we made sure that we had a piano teacher that worked with kids to enjoy music, and they had a choice whether they were doing the conservatory, you know, sort of stream or learning how to play the piano, but not having, you know, exams.
Yeah.
And she was very understanding about that, and I think that made a difference. I didn't want it to be, this is a forced thing. I don't care whether you want to take piano lessons or not. So when David said, I don't want to take piano lessons, I knew he would be getting... good music at school and through the bands and so on he was in, so I wasn't worried about that.
Like the most my teacher ever forced me was I had to keep a practice journal, like when I practiced, what I practiced, and how long,
yeah.
And
then you'd feel guilty.
Would they ever,
would they ever
be like, only 3 times this week, David?
Oh,
sometimes, yeah, and I would feel bad, but it was still like if we were working on a song, like we still worked through like conservatory books and everything, but I didn't want to do the testing, so we just kind of moved on to the next one when we felt like it. Not the most structured, but and if I was having like a lot of trouble with one song and I couldn't get it and I didn't seem to be making headway and it was just frustrating me, then she'd be like, okay, well, let's just move on to another song. We can come back to this later. We can even forget about it. So. I think if you're enjoying it, you're gonna push yourself harder. You're gonna make goals for yourself instead of just following what everybody else says for you for goals.
Sounds like having a match between you and your teachers was important too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like for me, I know I found kind of recently actually, like I like playing jazz piano way more than classical, and so like. I don't know, I kind of like brought that up with my teacher. I was like, yeah, you know, I'd rather do more just like contemporary stuff. I don't really want to do the classical stuff. So then she found those kind of songs in the conservatory books, and we just did that. And then I found like I was practicing way more than I would have like
mm-hmm.
with the classical mm-hmm. songs, right? Because I actually wanted to, and I liked the songs.
And
right?
when it seems like when a teacher knows your personality and they know the type of stuff that you like, it helps them too, because they want to know, okay, how can I make this class a good class, or how can I make this year a good year, or whatever. So they try and find stuff that works for you.
Yeah.
So and then that way it works for them too, because then they know how to structure a lesson or whatever.
That's great. So it's you were performing, all of you were performing from a pretty young age. Was stage fright ever a factor for any of you? Did you ever get nervous?
Yeah, but that kind of went away though. Because it's true, the more you practice and the more you do something, the more comfortable you get. So I still get nervous and stuff before I go on stage, but I've never had a moment where I've just kind of blanked on stage and not known what to do, you know?
They did a lot of performance in Kiwanis at the end of each year. That was sort of like their examinations each year, so something to focus on. And so...
Yeah, so you've been performing
a
lot of concerts.
Yeah, I think it would be way harder if I just was thrown into it now, you know, because then I'd be nervous, like, oh, what will people think? What do I do if I screw up? But now I know from, you know, the other times that I've been performing, and the more you perform, you know, if you screw up, you just keep going, you don't stop and get all upset about it.
And what got you past the initial nerves? Do you remember?
Well, for me, I mean, I haven't really been in a band where Mercedes hasn't been in it. Like,
yeah.
Every single band I've been in, she's always been there, kind of
the front person or just like the guitarist, whatever. And so for me, I know like just having her there and being able to like talk through it and just like joke around always helped me out more whenever, like before we went on stage or on stage, you know, it was easier for me.
And for me, thinking about the audience not as, oh, they want you to screw up, they want you to do badly, they're waiting for you to screw up, like that's just a way of making yourself more nervous. If you think that they are there, why are they there? They're there to see you, and they're there to see you do what you like to do, and they want to have a good show, and they want to be entertained, and they don't want to see you screw up, they want to see you do well. So just thinking about that always helped me out. And yeah, having you there too.
And like, yeah, like the people who came to your show, whatever, they want to see you rock out and do your best, right?
They like you, that's why they're there.
Right.
Yeah.
So you really had to tell yourself some things to keep it going. How about you, David?
Well, for me, like, I always had a bad stage fright before the band. Like, I can remember, like, the end of the year recitals at my piano teacher's house. Like, we all, like, sat on the stairs and, like, waiting to go on. And, like, I remember, like, one year, I forget what year it was, but I, like, sat down and I could barely play. Like, my fingers were shaking and everything. But with the band, like, my first show, I was nervous because it was, like, my first time on stage playing in a band. And I don't even remember how I got past it. I just kind of, like, just threw myself into it and, like, played the first song. And the first song was a little bit rough. But then, like, now I find if I'm ever getting nervous, I'll just, like, look in the crowd and, like, find the people that I know or the people that seem to be enjoying it and that are into it and kind of, like, feed off of their energy. And that helps me get back at ease. And if I'm feeling really nervous and, like, really not good about it, I can always just go back and, like, make faces at people.
Yeah. It's so true. The crazier the crowd, then the better you feel on stage. I mean, if they are cheering really loud and they seem to really like it, then I always feel way less
so
nervous.
Easy. Yeah.
But if they're, like, playing room and they're just arms like crossed, that, I'm like, do they like it? I don't know. It's always bad.
May I interject a story here?
Sure.
About comedy and being humor, you know, having a sense of humor about your music. Phoenix played a recital and it was a long classical piece. It was a big piece for her. And she was quite young, maybe, I don't know, 10 or something.
Yeah.
And the last chord was a big chord and she completely blew it. Like, it was so off. She stood up, looked at the audience, said, "Well, that was original," and took her bottle.
Oh, you have to have a good attitude
about
these things.
Everyone just loved that.
Now, did any of the parents ever need to help the band members get over some of that stage fright or that anxiety?
I think you have. I don't know.
I think you have.
Oh.
Even if you didn't
remember,
really know it, I think
like
so.
The first time Phoenix and I ever did a duet, and I was like, "I can't do it. I'm so scared. I don't want to do it." And you, I don't know. You helped me, I guess.
I don't know if we consciously did or not. I don't remember saying, "It's okay, David. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it." I just, go knock him dead. You know, that's how I did. I remember the first time I ever saw him perform, and he probably would like me not to mention it. It was four, I think.
Oh,
three or four.
Oh no.
His older sister, their class at school. Had done a segment on medieval times, and the teacher was really great and capped it off with a dinner that all the parents were invited to, like it was a and Lynn had helped out in the classroom, and David was welcome to go along. So all the kids in the class knew David. And so he was part of this whole medieval thing, and when it came time, they had like a head table. The principal was like the king, and you know, had it all set up in the gym of the school. And David was determined he was going to sing a song. And he walked up there. He had boots on. He had a plastic sword, and he had a. Did he have a breastplate on?
Yeah, I had like one of those plastic like knight.
And he walked up, and he turned around, and he sang.
Old King Cole.
And he just belted it out to a gym definitely very embarrassed. And then walked off the stage. I know that he does, you know, has in the past gotten nervous before various shows, whether it was a school concert, in high school, in the band that he was in, you know, he played saxophone.
I always got more nervous for, like, school things. Like, for when I'm not playing bass, I'm way more nervous. It, like, it's weird, but when I'm playing saxophone, when I was playing saxophone for school or singing at school, it was a lot more nerves. I think it's also because in those situations, it's a bunch of people who are generally older than you, like parents and all that. And no matter how much they're there to see their kids do well and everything, they're sitting in a dark auditorium and there's like no sound before you start playing. So, you know, like if I mess up now, everyone's going to notice.
Yeah, it's a different atmosphere.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah,
like I feel like
at a rock show. At a rock show, it's like if you mess up, everybody like laughs about it and moves on.
Half the time they don't even know.
Yeah, like half the time I'll get off stage and be like,
yeah!
I'll be like, oh, I messed up that intro really badly. And everyone's like, you did? I didn't notice at all. So.
Yeah.
One of my memories, I asked David earlier.
Your memories.
Not long ago memories. When David first the band was first playing. And I said to him, you know, dude, you don't really look as though you're nervous on stage or that you get nervous ahead of time. And he said, you know, Mom, I open the case of my bass and I wrap my hand around the neck of my bass. And when I do that, sort of, it's like all is right with the world. Like it's something that I do, that I love, and it's sort of a, you know, like a touch point and you know, I'm set to go. And I thought, wow, I wish I could be like that or like that in my life. Like I think it's good to, you know, sort of have some of that nervous energy, but to be able to, you know, go on stage and perform. Like we just stand in the audience and just admire the three of them so much and what they're doing.
Sometimes like the parents, I don't know, I think you guys sometimes get more nervous than we do, because it's like, when we're on stage, it's a different persona, we're not, you know, we have to be like, confident, and like, you know, and then
nerves are good, actually.
Nerves are good on stage.
Yeah, nerves keep you on.
For you guys, it's like, oh my god, like watching, and you know all the songs so well, and you know, it's probably harder for you than it is for us sometimes. But.
So do the parents always go to your shows?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
When they can, they're not working, but they're normally, at least one of them is normally there.
I wasn't sure who was going to arrive today. I sent out an email inviting the band. I said, well, parents can come if they want to. They're all here. That's fantastic.
Well, we all actually came into town yesterday at some point.
Okay.
So we'd be, you know.
So if they're traveling, do you always travel with?
Yes.
Yeah. And how would you describe those trips? I mean, I can imagine I have two kids, two boys who are close, they're not twins, they're close in age, and I know sometimes on a long car trip when you're in that tight little space, you know, the words I never wanted to say, do I have to pull this car over, sometimes do come out of my mouth. So what are those trips like? Do you all travel together in the same vehicle? Are you separate?
We've got all our kids.
Yeah.
We usually listen to a lot of very heavy metal. I was like a dad. Yesterday he had his headphones and his iPod, so
I didn't make everybody else suffer through my music.
Phoenix and I always listen.
Yeah.
I lost my iPod. I don't know what happened. Too bad.
It calms the beat.
Oh, they're changing our tastes for sure in music.
Yeah,
exciting.
Yeah. And this is the longest road trip so far. So.
Okay.
It hasn't been that bad.
And we've done road trips out east. Ever since they were small, so they're good in the car. They're still good in the car. Although yesterday they got into it.
Yesterday, oh my gosh. Yeah. We kept throwing M&Ms at each other, and she's like, we have to stop, we have to stop.
We're getting the backstage.
The other thing at the moment is that, you know, they're of an age where they all have some kind of communication device, whether it be iPhone, BlackBerry, whatever. And if they're not listening, even when they're listening to the music, they're tweeting and Facebooking and all that kind of stuff. So that keeps them occupied in some ways, instead of constantly, are we there yet?
Sometimes, like when we go to studio or whatever, the three of us will be in one van, and it'll be like one parent driving, and I feel so bad for her.
Yeah. One time we had like a whistling trio, whistling all the same song.
But like we couldn't, like we were trying to harmonize the whistles, and like we keep laughing and messing up, and.
You guys just have nerves of steel then.
So who does now did the parents play a role in the professional part of all of this? I mean, now that it's going beyond just playing in the neighborhood and you're traveling and getting up on stage. So what role did the four of you play in taking the band to the next level, I guess you could say?
I think initially it was more getting shows and helping in that. But then Chris and Nicole, they're manager and producer, contacted us after a battle of the bands in Stratford.
That we won.
Yeah.
So it was the three of you at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because the girls were minor, and David, you were a minor at that
point.
So the parents had to be involved.
Yeah.
Also wanted to be involved. Still are in negotiations with whatever is going on.
And at first, like, I think it was mainly you guys because, like, you guys, well, I just realized we're only on mic, not like Judy and David, there we go, that did a lot of it, like, getting shows, taking care of merch, all of that, because I came in as a third member after Courage and Love had been going for a little while. And so, yeah, like, you guys were doing a great job of...
And you didn't you never really complain whenever we have to drive far or, like, go anywhere, which is great.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, I'll see if I can get off work.
Yeah,
you
go, we go.
Well, that was the thing that, you know, I said to David, I'm sure Judy and David said to the girls here, that we'll get you where you need to go, whether that be physically in the vehicle to get you somewhere or make whatever connections need to be made to get you to the next level, that we want to see you succeed.
Well, quite honestly, they take us places I've never been as well. Probably never would have.
So the parents have to be a little adventurous too, it sounds like.
You know what? Fun. Parents, they miss out if they don't, go to these places. We've met so many kids that if I would have not been part of the band culture, I would probably never have gotten to meet kids with spiked hair, with, you know, like,
they're the nicest kids.
Some of them come and say, oh, hi, Mom. They'll call me Mom, because I'm probably you, too. Because
And that's one of the things, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you all on, because you hear so many people, so many parents who are afraid, oh, what's going to happen when my kids become a teenager, and all the problems that teenagers have, and high school is there's so many dangers and there's so many negative things that could happen. It's so important that people hear, well, you know what? Some teenagers do okay.
Yeah, instead of hanging out in malls or hanging out at the bar, which, you know, which sounds funny, but, you know, the comment I had from people that I've worked with and even some friends is, you know, so what are you doing this weekend? Oh, we're going somewhere with the band, whether it was in Toronto or Tilbury or Niagara Falls, or St. Cat, whatever. And, how come you keep going? Like, you know, isn't David old enough to drive? Well, yes, he is. You know, but the band puts so much effort into their set. They come off the stage, they're just, I'll say, wasted. But sucked right out of them, right? Because they've given it everything they've got. And I don't want him driving an hour in the car by himself at 1 o'clock in the morning coming home from a gig. And if you played hockey or soccer, I'd be at the arena or the soccer field. This is his hockey and soccer. So as parents, we'll be there whenever we can. I've missed a couple because of work, but...
Well, not my choice.
It is fun for the parents.
Well, it's a whole education of all sorts of different things. I mean, David, okay, at the beginning, was sort of like, okay, David, you're talking about riffs. What's a riff? We're talking about a cab and a head. Okay, a cab and a head. What's a cab? And this, you know, this whole sort of thing. And I think, would I have had any reason to learn this otherwise? No, I guess I could have chosen to be a parent who, well, that's a different language and he's a teenager and that's his thing and, you know, whatever. But that, I think, especially as teenagers get older, there aren't the connections that you can make in as many different levels, because you want them to be independent, you want them to be, you know,
doing their own thing, but you still want to be connected. So this is a, you know, this is a great way to, you know, be able to give support. And we've talked to people, you know, in their 20s and 30s who've said, you know, I started playing in a band when I was 12, said one fellow to me, and my parents didn't come to see me play until I was 24.
Mm, yeah.
And his comment was, I think they thought that if they didn't come to the gigs, that I would stop being in the band.
And a lot of these guys are so hardworking too. They have jobs and they're at jobs all day, and then they they practice at night, and you know, so many of those bands are really committed. You guys are really committed, hardworking. I mean,
you may think that you cramp our style or whatever, but so many people are like, "Is that your parents over there?" And we're just kind of like, "Yes." And they say, "Oh my gosh, you're so lucky! I wish my parents would come." Like, I keep forgetting about bands, how lucky we are. Actually do come out.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to meet these people, but we also try to give the band the latitude to hang out with the other bands without us, you know, right over their shoulder.
Yeah. And you guys do. You're not hovering around. You're somewhere.
I usually see like a little bit before the set, and then like when we leave.
When I see you. And like I can generally like pick out my parents. Like I can see them if I need them, but it's also like they're there, but it's not like, they're over my shoulder all the time, making sure I'm not like talking to the wrong person or
that
doing
gives
anything
us
bad.
Opportunities to talk to fans and other bands and stuff like that. You know, just ourselves.
It sounds like there needs to be a level of trust there, that you can trust that the band members are going to be safe and they're not going to get themselves into trouble. Because we're talking about 17-year-old, two 17-year-old young ladies in bars. Where most parents would say, well, I'm not going to let my 17-year-old go to a bar.
That grows, though. I mean, initially the first shows, they were not allowed to leave the venue. If they left the venue, they had to let us know. And I mean, they were 14 then. So as they showed the maturity and responsibility, of course, you know, you lose.
We have to prove ourselves.
But you're still really good at checking in on us. And so, with
us now that you text.
So the trust has to go both ways.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
So there you have it, part one of our interview with the band members and parents of Courage My Love. What a great conversation we had, and it's going to continue. 2 weeks from now, we'll be talking more about trust, about communication, about sibling rivalry even, and about the safety concerns involved in having your teenage children travel around to various places and meet up with adults and work in bars. Come back in 2 weeks, and we'll continue that really interesting discussion. You can find out more about Courage My Love at their website, ilovecouragemylove.com. You can see their videos there. There are links to their Facebook page and their Twitter. Do check out ilovecouragemylove.com. Now, before we go, I wanted to talk about one more thing, because I recently received an email from someone who informed me about their podcast that they do, and it's called Bitty Bedtime Stories. This is a great podcast. Now, we've talked about sleep before on the show over and over again. I've talked about sleep because my kids have always had trouble staying in bed once they get there and falling asleep. So this is a podcast where there's fantastic voiceover work, and it's great stories, great audio and free audio for parents and their kids to listen to before bed or in the car. The voices, like I said, are fantastic. There's a little bit of, there are some musical cues in there that are just relaxing, calming music. Often there's even a learning element. There might be a new vocabulary word or something like that for the kids to enjoy. It's funny. There's a few things in there for that the parents are going to get maybe that the kids won't, but it's great. My kids really enjoy it, and they especially love the great voices. So Bitty Bedtime Stories is the name of the podcast, and you can find Bitty Bedtime Stories on iTunes. And that's it for us this week. You can email us at info@familyanatomy.com or visit our website at familyanatomy.com. You can find us on Twitter or find us on Facebook. And as usual, we'll leave you with a bit of a tune by Brother Love, and he's over at brotherloverocks.com. Thanks for listening. Get up and sing, oh, like we used to do. Yeah, cause it's a family thing. Hey! You know what to do. FamilyAnatomy.com